But Steve Paulson wanted a deeper understanding of this most celebrated of virtues. And so he turned to cultural historian William Miller, author of The Mystery of Courage. Miller says the passengers who fought the hijackers on the plane over Pennsylvania were true heroes.
Many of us lie awake fantasizing, what would you do under those kind of circumstances? And in my most self-aggrandizing fantasy, I know I wouldn't, even though I know that plane was going to crash, that I was going to die, I couldn't have ever see myself, even in my fantasies, as being the one who led the attack on the hijackers.
Who were obviously carrying knives, who had probably already killed people on the plane.
I wouldn't be able to do it. But I think, I said this in my fantasies to myself, that I would be able to follow some guy who did take the lead. I wouldn't leave him in the lurch. I could never live with myself if I left somebody who did have the guts to attack. I feel I could follow him, but I wouldn't be able to, I would never have that strength of character to initiate the first rush. So some guy up there did that, and then people followed him. I mean, the country owes them a debt that they can never pay.
Now, cowardice has also been a controversial topic in the last month. Various people, from Bill Maher to Susan Sontag, have objected to the standard descriptions of the hijackers as cowardly, since they were willing to die for what they believed in. And I don't know that we need to rehash that whole controversy, but it's obviously hard to talk about the bravery of our enemies.
Right. Well, that gets kind of complicated. If it was too easy for these guys to suicide, if they believe literally 100% certain, no discount at all, that they are going to go to Islamic heaven for what they did, and they're looking forward to death, they're welcoming it with that kind of, well, then they're just being rational within their system. They're hardly being courageous. And I think there's a way to make it a justifiable, coherent distinction between courage, which often looks pretty like crazy behavior, and fanaticism, which we would not want to glorify or honor at all. You would want to know how easy it is to recruit suicide bombers in their culture. And if it's real easy, then it doesn't take much virtue to do it, because virtue is hard.
You just used the words courage and virtue almost interchangeably, are they?
Yes, I did. And the actual linguistics of it is the word virtue and its earlier meaning simply meant courage, and then later was generalized to all of what we call the virtues. But the prime virtue was that virtue which you needed to secure all the other virtues, courage.
Well, maybe if when we're talking about our enemies, maybe it's a little easier if we put it in some historical context, and it's not so immediate, it's not quite so emotional. What about the Japanese in World War II, who were certainly fierce warriors?
They were pretty awesome. It's a complicated issue. We kind of wanted to demonize the Japanese and didn't want to see them as kind of a fully human enemy. Yet for that very reason, they inspired immense terror among, you know, the Western troops who had to face them, who knew they were facing a very seriously dedicated enemy. In the Japanese culture, you could actually declare it to be somebody's duty to be what in the West we would call going beyond the call of duty. And since, again, they got nearly 100% compliance with the norm of death before dishonor, then you could have to say within the Japanese system, they are not being courageous amongst each other. They're just doing their job in a kind of like, they're just conforming. But to the outside world, one Japanese soldier can look at another and say, I'm willing to die. You willing to die? And they can both say, yeah, I'm willing to die. And they say, well, we're just like everybody else here. Big deal. But they can look at each other and say, but you know, the guys on the other side can't say the same thing. So we're some pretty tough mothers.
But aren't there some similarities to the U.S. military? I mean, the whole effort to, in a sense, break down the individual will so that you're following what your commander tells you to do?
Oh, yeah. You know, courage isn't easy. And we use all kinds of techniques to hopefully have our courage last a little longer than some of our natural propensities to run and save our lives. So all the kinds of techniques of military training are an admission, at least in the West, that courage is hard. It's rare, it's difficult, and you want to use all the techniques at your disposal to get it. Shaming, training so that you'll just behave automatically, rah-rahing, rum rations, you know, you give them a shot of whiskey before they got to go charge. You use all these kind of means to hopefully get people to respond to a very difficult call. I'm not about to demean any of those methods. It's hard to do. And the military recognizes it's hard for people to carry out some of the orders they'll be asked to do.
Is courage in battle the highest form of courage? Does it trump all other forms of courage?
Well, you know, let's put it this way. As an historical matter, courage is a martial virtue before it's any other thing. Then it expands conceptually off the battlefield. It's about protecting your loved ones and yourself from hostile attack. And that means hostile physical attack. And I think, like, we now, in a largely pacified culture, try and downplay the virtue of pure physical courage. But I would think that moral courage, it doesn't mean anything if it doesn't have a very powerful physical component to it.
If you're not willing to really risk your body, maybe your life, then that's...
Then it's not courage. It's not courage. So let's say you've got this stand up in the meeting, willing to defend an unpopular cause against hostile community reaction, that you're kind of the person who says what's on his mind and isn't a little weeny about speaking their mind. And you stand up in a meeting and you say, I take this position, and it's the most unpopular position, and you're going to lose your job. And somebody says, sit down or I'll kick the crap out of you. And you say, oh, I'm sorry, I'll sit down. And that's not moral courage. It's not courage. It's cowardice. You're just mouthing words unless you're going to adhere to the position under certain kinds of threats where your body's on the line.
As you were doing this research and came across examples of moral courage, any particular ones that stood out to you?
Well, yes. And you know where they occur? They occur on the battlefield or in military contexts. So this will make me unpopular again by saying it, but it's there that the situations are so stark and the domain of courage. There was an Israeli lieutenant colonel or brigade commander who was the youngest brigade commander in the history of the Israeli army at 29. His career path was to be, he would be the commander-in-chief of the armies at the youngest age. He was a star, a superstar. And he was ordered to invade Beirut in 1982, and he refused his orders. He said, I lack the courage to face the parents of my men to explain to them why their kid died. So he blamed himself for lacking the courage to face the parents, lacking moral courage, for taking a morally courageous stand of destroying his own career. His career was destroyed. And it turned out that there was no invasion of Beirut. So, I mean, it wasn't even that his refusal of orders wasn't just a kind of a symbolic statement. I mean, it altered the policy.
That must have been awfully hard for him to go home then.
Well, imagine his situation. He goes home and he's cheered by the doves, people for whom he has utter contempt. It's like being welcomed by the peaceniks. It was for him the punishment for what he did. And what he did immediately to show his commanders that he wasn't refusing orders because he was afraid to die, he immediately re-enlisted in the ranks as a private I'll go face bullets. That isn't the issue.
You know, one thing that strikes me in this whole conversation is that, at least the way we've talked about courage, it's so closely tied to our notions of manliness. And
yes,
traditionally,
it is.
Calling a man a coward is sort of like calling him a sissy. And certainly for any man in the military, the last thing you want to be called is anything that would make you look like a woman. I mean, it's not very nice to say, but that's just the way it seems to work.
Well, the language of courage in every language, actually English does it less than most, but the word for courage is almost always the same, the word for man. Vir, virtue, is virile. Virtue is the Latin word for man. In languages, it is clear that the virtue has been gendered historically. But, you know, there's a lot of anxiety behind that.
Well, it's absurd to think that women are never courageous.
Oh, well, men know that. Let me put it this way. One of the things that gets played out in the cultural history of the idea of courage is whether courage is best manifested on offense or best manifested on defense. Offense has always said, well, it just takes, it's very male. It's like quick spurts of energy and then exhaustion. Defense means you just have to be there day in, day out, taking crap. And defense starts to get feminized so that it's not just men who play defense, but it's women who play defense. And it turns out women can take more crap than men. So that defense, the whole courage of defense gets expanded, gets off the battlefield, gets away from men and becomes Christian patience, sufferance, fortitude, at which women are historically as good or better than men at. But also, if you think about it this way, there's another kind of interesting thing, is that who raises these little boys? Who raises the men in these cultures? You think some man is standing over a woman cooing to her little child? No. That's totally delegated. The reproduction of the honor culture is left to women to reproduce.
Although it might be left to the peers when the boy goes to school and there are certain
expectations. It's a lot left to the peers. But in heroic cultures, it's the women who say, you want to get in my bed again? You ever want to set foot in this bed again? Then go kill Thord. Or mothers saying to their kids, there's one famous example of a Gothic matron who sees her son running in battle from some Roman cohort or something, and she lifts up her skirts and shows her genitals to her son and says, crawl back in, you coward.
Wow.
These are tough ladies, you know.
William Miller, talking with Steve Paulson. Miller's the author of The Mystery of Courage,